What about Stephen? He can't sleep on the sofa forever.
Don't worry about him. Like you said, he's been under a lot of stress. Once he's been here a while, he'll get over it. And when Michael gets back, he'll forget all about it. I think he misses Michael. Must be kind of tough on him to see his brother go off to Grandma's for the summer, while he has to stay behind and be sick.
Hearing a slight noise, Carmen pulled away and turned around to see Stephen standing just outside the living room doorway, rubbing his sleepy eyes. His tank top and boxers seemed too big for his bony frame, and his dark blonde hair sprouted in every direction.
"You guys call me?"
he asked, voice hoarse and thick with sleep. Carmen went to him, smiling.
"Uh-huh. I was just saying goodbye to your dad. He's on his way back to New York."
"When are you coming back?"
Stephen asked through a yawn.
"I'll be back at the end of the week."
He went to Stephen's side and gave his frail shoulder a squeeze.
"Take care of your mom while I'm gone. And do what the doctors tell you, okay?"
Stephen nodded.
"Drive safe."
"No other way, kiddo."
Al and Carmen said their goodbyes, then Al was gone. Stephen headed for the kitchen, and Carmen followed, hoping she wouldn't be able to hear Al drive away in there. Stephen got a glass of water, and Carmen sat down to her breakfast again. Suddenly, she was no longer hungry. In fact, she wasn't sure she'd been hungry in the first place.
"You want some breakfast, Stephen?"
she asked.
"I just made this for myself, but I don't really want it."
She got up and Stephen took her seat, still looking as though he were half asleep.
"You awake enough to eat?"
he shrugged. Standing behind him, Carmen put her hands on his shoulders and said,
"I'm going to take a shower, okay?"
He nodded, staring at the food. As she started out of the kitchen, Stephen said,
"Were you talking about me or something?"
Carmen turned to him.
"Maybe. Why?"
"I thought I heard... somebody called me. Woke me up."
"You probably just heard me mention your name."
But, she wondered, what else did he hear? She hoped he hadn't heard her talking with Al about the house.
"Well, I'm hitting the shower. You can watch TV if you want, just don't wake Peter and Stephanie. It's still early yet."
Carmen went into the bathroom and closed the door, but didn't start the shower right away. She sat on the edge of the tub, frowning, hoping Stephen had not overheard them talking about the house's background. He didn't need that little tidbit for his imagination to chew on.
"He would have said something,"
she breathed to herself.
"Yeah, he would have said something if he'd heard that."
She stood, turned on the shower, and began to undress. Stephen stared down at the breakfast through bleary eyes. The sausages looked like bruised, swollen fingers, and the sight of the fried eggs, although he usually loved eggs for breakfast, made him wince slightly. He pushed away from the table and stood with his glass of water. He put the glass on the kitchen counter and looked out the window. It was another white colonial, just like their house and the house on the other side of them. Their new house, with the new neighbors, in a new town, even a new state. All because of him. Stephen supposed it was easier on everyone to be close to the hospital so they wouldn't have to make such a long trip every day. But still, he felt as if he'd uprooted his entire family from New York and transplanted them here in Connecticut, all by himself. As if that weren't bad enough, he hated the house to which his illness had brought them. It was an attractive house, yes, with lots of space and a room all his own, but it was a room he did not want. He knew Mom and Dad didn't believe him when he said the house was evil. He knew that, when he said he didn't want to sleep in that room downstairs, at least not alone, they humored him because he was sick. They didn't really say anything like that, of course, but he knew that was what they thought. He could tell by the way they'd talked to him and looked at him when he'd told them. But that didn't change anything. He still felt, knew, that there was something wrong with the house, that there was something bad about it. He just wasn't sure what that something was, and he wanted to find out. He'd known the moment he went downstairs to see his room for the first time. He'd seen nothing. He'd smelled nothing other than a musty old basement odor, but something had been wrong enough down there to spontaneously raise goosebumps all over the upper half of his body. Something about the very air in his room had stiffened the fine hair on the back of his neck and had given him an odd queasy sensation, as if he were about to become nauseated. The room had a bad, dark feeling about it, a secret feeling. And he'd had the unshakable feeling that he was not alone, that he was being watched, that if he were to spin around, he would find someone or something in the room with him, moving toward him silently, smoothly, rapidly. He had spun around, but nothing was there. The fact that he saw nothing did not comfort him, however. His heartbeat quickened, his palms grew clammy, and his breaths came quickly. He'd gone back upstairs, fighting the urge to run, and had told, or tried to tell, his mother. Of course she hadn't believed him, but that didn't mean it wasn't so. There was something very bad in the house, something bad about it. And Stephen's family had moved into it because of him. He stared out the window, wondering what kind of people the neighbors were, wondering if they had any kids his age, wondering if they knew there was something wrong with the house. Early morning sunlight shone through the treetops and dappled the ground outside with a half-hearted brightness, as if it were still too early to turn the light on high. Stephen turned from the window and left the kitchen with a long yawn, wondering if there was anything good on television so early in the morning. In the hall, he could hear the shower hissing from the bathroom, could hear his mother's voice briefly, talking to herself the way she sometimes did when she dropped the soap or grabbed the wrong shampoo. He walked along the staircase and had started into the living room when a strong male voice called, "Stephen!" He jerked to a halt, frozen in place. The voice had not come from the bathroom, and certainly not from the shower. His mother's voice could never sound that deep anyway. It was a man's voice. "Stephen!" He turned around slowly, waited. "Stephen!" The voice sounded impatient. It wasn't very loud, but it was crystal clear. "Come here, Stephen!" Slowly, cautiously, he walked back along the staircase, a trembling hand on the banister toward the bathroom. "Stephen!" He stopped and looked over the banister at the stairs that led down to the basement, down to his room. The voice was coming from down there, insistent, losing patience with him. The shower continued to hiss. "Stephen, come down here." Mouth open, thin white-knuckled hands clutching the banister, eyes widening slowly, he leaned a little farther over. His mouth became cotton dry almost instantly. "Stephen." A laugh now, low and conspiratorial, a secret laugh. "Come down here, Stephen. You've got to see this." He turned to the bathroom. He could still hear the shower. "Come here, Stephen. I want to show you something." Peter and Stephanie were sound asleep in their rooms, and neither of them could sound like that anyway. There was no one downstairs. At least, there wasn't supposed to be anyone downstairs. He tried to move forward to the top of the stairs so he could look down to the landing below, but he felt goosebumps rising on his skin, and the vague churning in his stomach that he'd felt when he'd gone downstairs before, and, "Stephen!" He thought of the feeling he'd had down there, the feeling of being watched, of not being alone, and wondering if he'd been right, wondering if whatever had been down there just a couple days ago had declined to speak up. He began to walk backward instead, stumbling as he turned around and went into the living room and sat on the sofa. Fainter now with distance, but no less distinct. "Stephen, come down here." He leaned forward and slapped his hands over his ears, but it didn't help. The voice was muffled, but still there. He stood, went to the television and turned it on, turned the volume up louder than he normally would, then returned to the sofa and curled up beneath the blankets, pulling them up over his ears. On the television, Bugs Bunny was arguing with Daffy Duck about whether it was rabbit season or duck season. And downstairs, the voice continued to call him.
"Rabbit season!"
"Stephen?"
"Duck season!"
"Stephen, come down here."
"Rabbit season!"
"I
said come here, Stephen.
Duck!
What are you doing?
A voice in the room with him now. Stephen gasped and jerked the covers all the way over his head and clenched his eyes shut. The television was silenced suddenly, and the voice said,
I told you not to wake the kids.
Silence.
Stephen, what's the matter?
He realized, through the pounding of his heart in his ears, that it wasn't the voice. Something was different. He pulled the covers down slowly and opened his eyes to see his mother standing over him in her blue terry cloth robe with her hair wrapped in a towel. She was frowning, but the anger was gone from her voice when she spoke again.
You okay?
He nodded.
Why'd you have the television so loud?
It didn't wake them.
I know, but why?
He licked his lips and tried to hide the trembling in his hands as he thought of something to say. He finally settled on the truth.
I heard, a voice.
A voice? You mean one of the kids?
He shook his head.
A man.
Oh, it was probably me, hon. I was talking to myself and...
He shook his head insistently and said,
No, it came from downstairs, and it was calling me down there. Calling my name.
She stared at him a moment. Hands on her hips, then seated herself on the edge of the sofa.
Well, that's just silly, isn't it?
He didn't respond.
Well, think about it, Stephen. There's nobody down there.
Again, no response.
Right? I mean, I was in the shower and the kids are asleep, I think. Anyway, we know there's no one downstairs, right?
It wasn't a person, and... It was trying to get me to...
His voice quaked for a moment, and a chilly feeling crawled over his shoulders.
To go down there.
What was?
Whatever's down there.
There's nobody down there, Stephen.
I said it's not a person.
Mom's frown deepened, and she closed her eyes a moment, at a loss. Then...
I thought you said you heard a voice.
Yeah, but... I know there's nobody down there, but I also know that there's something wrong with this house. Something evil. I think there was a...
Oh, stop it, Stephen. We talked about this. Houses aren't evil. And there's no such thing as ghosts, and voices don't come out of nowhere.
Stephen looked away from her, frustrated and still a little frightened, because what if no one ever believed what he knew to be true?
This house is evil,
he whispered. Staring at the back of the sofa.
I don't know why, but it is.
His mother released a long, quiet sigh, then said,
You know what I think's wrong here? I think you were lying in here a while ago, maybe half asleep, and you overheard your dad and me talking in the hall. Talking about the house.
Stephen looked at her again, curious.
What about the house?
Well... If I tell you, you have to promise you'll keep it to yourself. I do not want Peter and Stephanie to know. You're older. I think you can take it. In fact, it'd probably be best if you didn't tell Michael either. Your dad and I wanted to keep quiet about it altogether, but I think it would explain your...
What?
Stephen asked impatiently, sitting up on the sofa.
Well, this house... Before we moved in... It used to be a funeral home.
Stephen's eyes widened. A funeral home. Somehow it sounded right. Almost as if... Well, it was impossible, of course, but it was almost as if Stephen had sort of known it all along. Known it without actually knowing it. It sounded so right that Stephen found himself nodding slightly.
But it's not a funeral home anymore,
his mother continued.
And besides, no one actually died here. The bodies were just brought here to be prepared for burial. Nothing bad happened here. The bad things, I mean, the people dying, all happened somewhere else. So see? There's nothing that...
What was downstairs?
She blinked, stared at him.
What?
I mean, did they do it downstairs? All that stuff with the bodies?
Well, I'm not sure yet, but I think...
Her voice softened.
Yes. I think they did.
Another slight nod from Stephen.
What I'm saying is that there's nothing evil here, okay? You believe me?
He looked at her again, but said nothing. Did nothing. He knew. He knew he was right. What his mother had told him had not reassured him. It had merely convinced him. 3. Settling in. As the first week passed, the house began to look orderly as well as occupied. Carmen spent a good deal of her time seeing to it that the furniture was arranged just so. She took great care in hanging pictures and paintings and unpacking delicate knick-knacks, some much older than she, and placing them in all the right rooms on all the right shelves. It began to look like a home, like their home. The only things missing were Al and Stephen's health. She talked to Al every evening, but it simply wasn't the same. She wanted him home, with her, where his mere presence would remove some of the weight from her shoulders. Stephen was continuing with his cobalt treatments. She took him to the hospital every day and waited for him on one of those antiseptic vinyl-covered sofas. It was always drained after undergoing the radiation, and he complained that the smell and taste of it, harsh and metallic and dry, clung to him throughout the day. One afternoon, Carmen decided she didn't like the old Venetian blinds on the windows. They were keeping out the sunlight. At least, she thought it was the blinds. The room seemed rather dim, although there was a lot of bright, direct sunlight outside. But when she'd raised the blinds all the way, it made no difference. It would probably be a good idea to get rid of the blinds anyway. She'd have to talk to Mr. Lawson about it first. She remembered her promise to herself on the first day in the house, to wash the windows. So she put on her scrub clothes and went to work. As she washed, Stephen came in with his friend Jason. She was happy to see Stephen make a friend so quickly. She'd been worried that the move would make him more introverted than the cancer already had, and she thought a new friend might help his spirits, and, who knows, maybe even his health. About the only time Stephen had gotten out of the house in the last few days was when she took him to the hospital for his treatment every morning. Now that he had a friend, she hoped he would stay out more, be a bit more active, and get plenty of fresh air. Jason lived down the street. He was Stephen's age, a red-headed, stocky boy, full of nervous energy, but seldom smiling, and with his eyes as nervous as his fidgety hands and feet.
"What are you guys up to?"
Carmen asked amiably as she knelt before the window, scrubbing up and down.
"We're going downstairs,"
Stephen replied from the hall. Her hand stopped moving on the glass, and she stood.
Stephen? You want to come here a second?"
Their footsteps stopped on the oak floor, and their voices whispered. Then one set of footsteps started back, and Stephen appeared in the living room.
"Yeah?"
he said, his eyebrows rising high over his shadowy, deep-set eyes.
"I thought you didn't like it downstairs,"
she whispered.
"I don't, but only when I'm alone."
"And you're going down there with Jason?"
He nodded.
"I told him what the house used to be, and..."
Stephen grinned.
"He thinks it's cool. So we're going downstairs to look around."
"I wish you wouldn't go around telling people about the house, Stephen. I know I said it wasn't evil, but, well, I don't think it's exactly cool, either."
"Don't worry, Mom. I won't."
He turned and left the room, and she heard their anxious voices and clattering footsteps fade down the stairs. "First it's evil, and we have to leave," she thought. "Now it's cool, and he's showing it off." Carmen smiled with relief as she went back to work. Stephen was already starting to get over his fear of the house. Friday moved in an arduously slow crawl, and Carmen thought the evening, when Al would come home for the weekend, would never arrive. She'd just finished making lunch for the kids, sandwiches and chips with milk and a variety of fruits, when Mr. Lawson dropped by.
"Just thought I'd stop by and see how you're coming along,"
he said with a smile after Carmen invited him in. Standing in the hall, he looked from the living room to the dining room and nodded.
"Looks very nice. Looks like you've settled in."
"Not quite, but almost,"
Carmen said. She sounded a little distracted because she was thinking to herself that this would be a good time to get a few more questions answered.
"Well, is there anything you need?"
he asked.
"Anything I can do?"
As a matter of fact, there is. Could you come downstairs with me?
Mr. Lawson nodded and followed her down the hall, down the stairs to the room that would be Michael's when he returned, through Stephen's room, across the concrete-floored hall and into the room that contained the chain and pulley device and the funneled pit.
"Do you have any idea what that's for?"
Carmen asked, nodding toward the pulley. Mr. Lawson crossed his arms over his chest.
"Yeah, that's the body lift," Carmen flinched. "See, the bodies were brought down that ramp out there," he pointed into the hall, "and prepared in that room."
He turned and pointed into the room with the blood-stained wall and sink.
"That was the morgue, see? When they were ready, they were lifted up through that trap door with this chain hoist."
"Into our bedroom," Carmen murmured.
Before Mr. Lawson could respond to her remark, she turned to the pit.
"What about that?"
"Well, the way I understand it, that was the blood tank. The bodies were drained into that, which leads to a separate holding tank than, say, the septic tank. They needed a separate tank for the blood because, well, it would be unsanitary otherwise."
Carmen took a deep breath and let it out slowly. He was speaking so matter-of-factly. She supposed she should take it the same way, because it was, after all, in the past. But she couldn't.
"Well, I just wondered,"
she said quietly, nodding. Then she turned and let him out.
"Oh, by the way," he said, waving vaguely overhead, "you see the crosses over the doorways?"
"Yes, I noticed those the first time I came down here."
"I'd appreciate it if you didn't move any of those, even if it's just to clean them. Just leave them where they are."
Carmen gave him an odd look.
"Any particular reason?"
He shrugged.
"They're old. I'd like to keep them as they are."
"All right. We will."
In Stephen's room, Mr. Lawson stopped and asked,
"Somebody sleep in these rooms down here?"
"Well, that room is for my son Michael, but he's staying with his grandma for a while. This is Stephen's room, but he doesn't sleep down here."
"How come?"
"He doesn't like it."
A smirk twitched over his lips.
"Any reason? I mean, did something happen down here? Something, odd? Strange?"
"Why?"
He shrugged again, still with the slightest hint of a smirk on his lips.
"Just wondered."
"Well, he just doesn't like it, he says, and, he says he heard voices down here."
A nod. But it was a slow, thoughtful nod.
"I see."
He cocked a brow, said,
"Kids."
Then moved on. He went through the French doors and stopped in what would be Michael's room when he returned. Mr. Lawson looked around the room, smiled, and said,
"You know, they used to call this the South Coffin Room."
Then he led the way back upstairs. Carmen was at the desk in the sunroom that branched off the living room, looking through the day's mail and wondering what to fix for dinner, when Stephanie screamed. She dropped the mail and it scattered over the desktop as she hurried through the living room and down the short hall that led to Stephanie's room, from which the scream had come. She nearly ran into Stephanie, who dashed out of the room in a blind run and straight into Carmen's arms.
"What's the matter, honey?"
Carmen asked, kneeling before Stephanie.
"There's a woman, Mommy! A woman in my room!"
"What?"
A furious nod.
"A woman! It was a woman! And she was standing there with her arms open!"
Her eyes were stretched open to their limit, and her small fingers dug into Carmen's forearms as her words tumbled into one another in an excited jumble.
"Whoa, whoa, whoa, Steffi! Come on, calm down a sec, okay?"
When Stephanie was silent, Carmen took her hand and led her to the bedroom, saying,
"Okay now. We're going to go into your room so you can show me what you saw."
Stephanie pulled back and said,
"It was a woman!"
"Well, then, let's go in and see her. She's probably still there, right?"
Timidly, Stephanie went into the bedroom with Carmen.
"Now, where was she?"
Carmen asked. Stephanie pointed to a dresser, which stood against the wall and had a large mirror over it.
"Right there. She was standing right there like this."
Stephanie spread her arms as if to embrace Carmen and give her an odd, dreamy smile.
Where do you suppose she went, Steph?
Stephanie looked around frantically, rigid with tension, then shrugged and muttered reluctantly,
I don't know.
Carmen went to Stephanie's bed and sat on the edge. She felt anger welling in her chest. Stephen had promised not to tell the kids about the house, but obviously he'd broken that promise. Yes, he was ill, and no, she could not expect him to be himself exactly, but there was no excuse for this.
Has Stephen said anything to you lately, Steph? Anything that maybe scared you?
Stephanie shook her head.
You're sure he hasn't been telling you any spooky stories?
Uh-huh.
Where is Stephen right now?
Outside with Jason.
Carmen turned to the window that was directly across from the mirror over Stephanie's dresser.
Do you think he might have been playing a trick on you, honey?
Her eyes widened, and she shook her head insistently.
No! How could he? She was standing right there!
You know what I think happened, honey?
She motioned for Stephanie to come to her, put an arm around the girl, and pointed to the window.
If somebody was standing outside that window, their reflection would be in that mirror. And if somebody, like Stephen, maybe, wanted to scare you by doing something creepy across from that mirror, you just might think you had another person in here with you.
Stephanie closed her eyes, pressed her lips together, and shook her head again. Shook it hard.
No, I saw her. She was there.
But, sweetheart, you know that can't be. How did she get in? How did she get out?
The girl bowed her head slowly and said nothing.
What's the matter?
You don't believe me?
Oh, no, I believe you saw something. All I'm saying is that it couldn't have been a woman standing in your room, that's all. You saw something in the mirror that probably looked like a woman. But I do believe you saw something. Okay?
Head still bowed, Stephanie gave a slight shrug and mumbled,
Guess so.
Carmen stood and kissed her on the head.
You want a glass of juice?
She shook her head no.
You want to go outside and play?
Another no.
Well, okay.
A hug, another kiss. Then Carmen went to find Stephen.
You promised me you wouldn't tell your brothers or sister about what you thought of the house,
Carmen said to Stephen. She'd called him to the porch, and they sat on the top step while Jason waited several yards away.
Yeah, I know,
Stephen said.
So why did you tell Stephanie?
I didn't.
Were you outside her bedroom window trying to scare her just now?
I was... No. I was with Jason, and we were...
She said she saw a woman standing in front of her dresser. Standing there with her arms open and a weird look on her face. The mirror on that dresser is right across from the window, so it wouldn't be hard for you to play a little trick on her.
Stephen's eyes widened, and his back stiffened, and Carmen saw what she thought at first to be guilt. Then she realized it more closely resembled fear.
She did,
he whispered.
I mean, she saw somebody in her room?
Carmen nodded.
I don't want this going on, Stephen. Do you understand? I want it to stop right now.
But I didn't say anything to...
Then why would she say she saw...
Maybe because she did.
Carmen blinked rapidly, then sighed.
Okay, listen, Stephen. Maybe she overheard you talking about it or something. I don't know. But I know she was very scared a little while ago. I don't want that to happen anymore. Do you hear me? Just keep it to yourself, okay? You can talk to me in private about it if you want, but just keep it to yourself around the other kids. All right?
But I didn't say anything!
Please, will you do that for me?
With his eyebrows knit so tightly and his pale face so tense, he looked too upset by her accusation for her to argue with him any further. Stephen nodded and Carmen gave him a quick kiss before going back in the house. She hoped that was the last of it.
I think I'm going to go inside for a while,
Stephen said.
Jason asked, You in trouble?
No. Why?
Because your mom wanted to talk to you privately just now, and she was pretty intense, and, well, you look, I don't know, worried, like something's bothering you.
Stephen shook his head absently, said,
I'll see you later,
and walked slowly back to the house. So Stephanie had seen someone in her room. Was it the same someone he'd heard? Mom said it was a woman. But even so, if it could come and go like that woman apparently had, then it could probably do any voice it wanted. So, he wasn't crazy. He wasn't imagining things. But he wasn't in any better shape than he was before. Now Mom not only didn't believe him, she didn't believe Stephanie either. No matter where Stephen went in the house, he could not shake the vague feeling that there was something else there, a presence other than his family's, something that was watching them, perhaps waiting for something. But he kept those feelings to himself mostly, because it was pretty obvious no one was going to believe him. It made him feel better to know that he was not alone now, but it made him feel only a little better. He climbed the front steps wearily and went inside, wondering if anyone else in his family would encounter the presence, and, if so, who would be next. When Al arrived that night, Stephen, Stephanie, and Peter were in the living room watching television, and Carmen was in the kitchen filling the apartment with the warm smell of baking chicken. She heard Al pull up, dropped what she was doing, and hurried out to meet him on the front walk.
Oh, I am so glad you're home, Carmen whispered into his neck as she wrapped her arms around him. He carried a brown paper bag in his left arm, and she crushed it between them.
Everything okay?
Oh, yeah. I just miss you, is all. We all miss you.
The children greeted him at the door, laughing, grinning, and hugging, all except Stephen, who stood back a few feet, pensive and unsmiling, thin arms folded over his chest. In the living room, Al announced he'd brought surprises for everyone and reached into the bag. He removed a fuzzy stuffed Opus the Penguin for Peter, 3 coloring books and a box of crayons for Stephanie, and a brand new fishing reel for Stephen, who barely reacted to the gift. Included with the reel were some new hooks and sinkers and a roll of fishing line. He gave a distant smile as he inspected the reel and thanked Al quietly. Fishing was a passion Stephen shared with Al, but they hadn't gone in some time because Stephen's reel was broken. Now all he needed was a Connecticut license, a lake or river with some fish in it, and maybe some enthusiasm.
So, where's my surprise? Carmen asked.
Al put an arm around her, squeezed her to him, and whispered in her ear with a smirk,
You'll get yours later.
Dinner was festive, with utensils clattering against plates and voices chattering. After dinner, everyone retreated to the living room. Al with a beer, she'd stocked the fridge on her last trip to the supermarket, to look for something good to watch on television, while Carmen began to clear the table. Without being asked and without saying a word, Stephen came into the dining room and began to help her.
Well, she said with quiet surprise, to what do I owe this honor?
Stephen smiled but said nothing for a while. Not until the table was cleared and the dishes were ready to be washed.
I'll help you wash them, if you'll do me a favor, he said sheepishly.
Oh, what's that?
He bowed his head and thought about it a moment, then,
Would you, go downstairs and get my tackle box out of my bedroom?
She smiled, but held back the small laugh that was trying to escape.
Sure, honey, she said. And you don't even have to help me with the dishes, if you don't want.
When he got his tackle box, Stephen put it on the dining room table beside his reel, hooks, sinkers, and line, seated himself and opened the box slowly, almost reverently. As he was putting the new additions in the box, Al slid a chair over and sat down beside him after getting another beer from the fridge. Pretty neat, huh?
Yeah,
Stephen said with a nod. Al put something on the table. A small rectangular card.
What do you say we break it in tomorrow?
Stephen smiled down at the license, then up at Al.
Really? That'd be great,
he said, a little flatly. They discussed fishing for a while, discussed where they might go, with Al doing most of the talking. Then they fell silent. The air between them changed, grew somewhat tense, until Stephen finally asked in a hoarse whisper,
Dad, do you think that if a person hears, voices, that he's crazy?
Al took a sip of beer, then said,
No. No, lots of people hear voices.
Some people see things. Sometimes, if a person's under enough stress, all kinds of weird things can happen to them. Especially if that person's been sick. You know what I mean? Stephen looked at him with suspicious curiosity. Al nodded. Your mom told me about it on the phone. And no, I don't think you're crazy. But listen, Stephen, you're going to have to keep it to yourself, okay? You can't go around telling the other kids. You already scared the hell out of Stephanie. Stephen closed his eyes and sighed quietly, thinking, I didn't, damn it, I didn't tell them. You need to relax, is all, Al continued, and that's what we're going to do tomorrow. Just you and me. We're going to relax and make some fish nervous, okay? Stephen nodded.
Okay.
Come into the living room. There's an old Abbott and Costello movie on.
In a minute.
Al returned to the living room, and Stephen put everything in the tackle box, then closed and latched it. He left it on the table as he got up and went down the hall to the bathroom. His hand froze 2 inches from the bathroom doorknob, as a voice said, Stephen, what are you doing? Quiet but clear. His breath caught in his throat. He turned only with great effort, slowly, stiffly. He looked down the stairs into the blackness below.
Stephen, I really think you should come down here.
Just quiet enough so the others couldn't hear over the sound of the television. Stephen backed up a couple steps until his back was touching the bathroom door.
Stephen.
There was movement in the darkness below, a subtle shift of gray in the black. Stephen's throat seemed to swell. His chest ached with the pounding of his heart.
Come here, Stephen.
The dry shuffle of feet scraped over the concrete floor.
Stephen.
He peeled himself away from the bathroom door, hurried along the hall toward the living room, and stopped in the foyer to catch his breath. He stood still a moment, eyes closed, arms clenched tightly over his chest, lips pressed together. Then he went into the living room, sat on the sofa, and stared blindly at the black and white images on the television. He remained silent while the others laughed, trying not to think of what he'd heard, trying not to think of his full, aching bladder. 4. More Voices. During the next month, Carmen became friends with Tanya, a neighbor on the block. Tanya was a heavy-set brunette, and she was very pregnant. She and her husband Benjamin had moved in only a few months earlier, hoping to be completely settled before the baby decided to make his or her appearance, which would be any time now.
Look, I wouldn't worry about it if I were you,
Tanya said over iced tea in Carmen's sunroom one afternoon.
Stephen's illness has really upset things for everybody, and you're in a new house, a new town. Makes sense that the kids aren't themselves. I can understand Stephen hearing things, Stephanie seeing things.
She sipped.
Don't make a big deal of it, and it'll pass.
Well, I don't know. I could sort of understand Stephen thinking he'd heard things. You know, voices, whatever. But when Stephanie said,
But you said yourself that Stephen probably said something to her about the voices he heard. Maybe even about the house's ugly past. Besides, they miss their dad. You know how that is. You miss him. Don't you feel a little off-center because of that?
Yeah, you're right, Carmen said, smiling.
But it drives me nuts, you know? If they stop doing things that drive you nuts, then you should worry.
Carmen laughed.
You talk like you've been a mother as long as I have, and you haven't even had your baby yet.
Tanya shrugged and grinned.
So, I'm practicing.
That evening, as the sunlight faded outside where Stephanie was keeping an eye on Peter, Carmen was sitting on the sofa, talking to her mother on the telephone. The television was on with the volume low, and Stephen was somewhere in the house. She was telling her mother how Stephen was coming along, talking about Stephanie and Peter, when Stephen hurried into the room, buckling his belt with eyes wide.
Is Dad home?
He asked, looking around.
No, of course not, you know that. He's in New York until the weekend.
I heard him call me.
What?
I heard him call me just now. It
sounded like he was in the hall, like he'd just come in.
He said as he looked back over his shoulder toward the front door.
Mom, can I call you back in a little while?
Carmen said. After she said goodbye and hung up, she asked,
Now, what'd you say? I thought maybe Dad came home early or something. I heard him call me just now. Well, you couldn't have heard him, hon. He's not here. But you know what? Sometimes I miss him so much, I wouldn't be surprised if I thought I heard him too. But it won't be long before he'll be here with us all the time, and he'll come home from work every evening. And when we think we hear him, it'll be because we do.
Stephen stared at her, as if she'd just told him water was wet.
I heard him,
he said, calmly, flatly. Then he turned and headed for the front door. Frustration and anger suddenly burned like bile in Carmen's throat. If he was going to go on insisting that he was hearing voices, then there obviously wasn't a damned thing she could do about it.
Okay,
Carmen snapped as she shot up from the sofa and followed him, her jaw set.
Okay, fine. If you want to believe that, go right ahead. I mean, it's pretty obvious he's not here, right? Oh, but don't let that stop you. Just for crying out loud, don't tell your sister.
He turned to her, his eyes weary, and said quietly,
I'm gonna go outside for a while.
After he'd gone out and closed the front door, Carmen stood in the living room doorway for a few moments, just staring at nothing in particular. It was going to have to stop. Stephen simply could not go on talking about voices he'd heard, voices that did not exist. He'd already upset Stephanie. What next? She would have to talk to Al. They would have to do something about it. Maybe they should speak with the doctor, see what he had to say. Maybe it was something they should be worried about. Carmen was also starting to get annoyed. She didn't know what got on her nerves more, Stephen's insistence that he heard voices that she never heard, and Stephanie's insistence that she'd seen a woman in her bedroom who wasn't there, or the vague, gnawing curiosity deep inside Carmen that made her wonder if maybe, just maybe.
Uh-huh,
she said to herself, going back in the living room.
No way. Ridiculous.
That Saturday night, after Peter and Stephanie had gone to bed and Stephen was asleep on the sofa, Al and Carmen spoke in hushed tones at the dining room table.
So, what do you think we should do? Al asked. You think maybe they need some kind of therapy?
Oh, Lord. I hope it's nothing that drastic yet. I'm just worried that, well, that it might turn into something like that if it's not stopped now. What do you think?
I don't know. You're with them all week. You're the one who hears about all these voices or whatever. I think their life has just been a little too interrupted recently, and they want some attention. Want to feel normal again. And Stephen, well, those cobalt treatments are no picnic. At least, that's what I think.
Do you think they need therapy?
Hell, do you think we could afford therapy?
She thought it over a moment.
No, you're right. It's just, well, it's getting on my nerves.
Let them know that. If they're just after attention, give it to them. But let them know you're fed up with the ghost stories. I think they'll stop.
Yes,
she said, nodding, staring at her tea.
That ought to do it. Yes.
She kept nodding. But that gnawing feeling of uncertainty, of mild confusion, the thing that had really been getting on her nerves lately, rose up inside her and would not go away. Stephen waited for the silence that told him it was safe to get up. He hadn't meant to eavesdrop, but he'd been unable to sleep. In fact, he'd been unable to sleep a lot lately, and their voices had been clearly audible in the night's silence. So he'd heard everything Mom and Dad had said in the dining room. He'd felt his heart sink into his stomach as he listened. And he'd thought over and over, they'll never believe me. Never. There's no way they'll ever believe me. He threw back his covers, got off the sofa, and flicked on the lamp at one end of the sofa before going into the kitchen for a drink of water. Because of the radiation treatments, his saliva ducts had dried up completely, and his mouth was constantly dry, so he drank more than he ever had before. When he was finished, he went quietly down the hall to Stephanie's room and tapped on the door with one fingertip, before opening it and stepping inside cautiously.
Stephanie? You awake?
He closed the door silently and stared into the dark.
Steph, it's me.
Squinting in anticipation, Stephen reached out and turned on the overhead light. She was lying on her back in bed, tense and trembling, the edge of the blankets pulled up just beneath her widened, terrified eyes. When she saw him, her body relaxed, and she closed her eyes as she sighed and pushed her head back into the pillow.
What's the matter?
Stephen whispered.
I thought you were a ghost.
Stephen stared thoughtfully at her a moment.
Is that what you think they are?
He asked, sitting on the edge of the bed.
Ghosts?
I don't know.
She shrugged.
What else?
Do you feel them?
She squinted, cocked her head to one side, and thought about it a moment.
Sometimes, I think.
Me too,
he whispered.
Sometimes I feel like, I don't know, like there's just something there, even though I can't see it.
I wish Michael'd come home,
she breathed. Stephen felt the same way, but asked,
How come?
Well, I think he'd believe us. Don't you?
Stephen watched her for a long time. Most of the time, his little sister was an annoyance, a pain in the neck. Since he'd gotten sick, he'd been looking at everything a little differently, as he was looking at his little sister now. She had become an ally, a friend. He took her small hand in his and whispered,
Listen, Steph, if anything else happens, you can tell me. Come to me right away and let me know, okay? I'll believe you.
Will you tell me if anything else happens to you?
He nodded and squeezed her hand. Carmen began to spend as much time with the kids as she could. With Peter, it was easy. He didn't wander far. But Stephanie was active, playing with other girls up and down the street, and Stephen spent a lot of time with Jason. They didn't seem to be in need of attention, but Carmen decided to keep trying. As usual, she missed Al. Having the house and the kids to herself all the time made her feel like she had more on her shoulders than she could handle. It helped to keep busy around the house, and she visited with Tanya a lot. She took Stephen to the hospital for his treatments and watched as he slowly grew more pale and brittle-looking. Sometimes she wanted to take him in her arms and hold him to keep him away from that hospital, fearing that the treatments were only making him worse. But the doctors assured her that those treatments were Stephen's best chance. Her weeks were speckled by stories from the kids, mostly from Stephen, stories of voices heard around the house. One morning, Carmen got up to find every light in the living room on, and Stephen sprawled on the sofa, as if he'd had an unusually restless night. She went around the room and turned off all the lights, then woke Stephen. He said he'd heard a voice in the dark, so he'd turned on the lamp beside the sofa. But the voice, a man's voice, continued, coming from the darkest corner of the room. So he got up and turned on another light, then another until they were all on and he was able to sleep. He told her, knowing full well that she would not believe him, and that didn't seem to bother him. But the fact that he didn't care whether she believed him or not bothered her. His attitude poked a hole in the attention-getting theory. It happened again and again. Stephanie would hear a voice in the bathroom, or Stephen would hear one in the hall, and no matter how Carmen talked to them, they nodded and apologized for bothering her, but somehow managed to give the impression that they knew something she didn't. The incidents bothered Carmen enough for her to write about them a number of times in her journal. It had become a habit for her to write down her thoughts and experiences, if not every day, then at least a few times a week, even when nothing particularly eventful had happened. It was comforting to put her feelings on paper, with the knowledge that no one would read what she wrote, that it wouldn't be criticized or graded. Early one Friday afternoon, she sat at the desk in the sunroom, writing in her journal as music played softly on the stereo in the living room. Stephanie and Stephen were outside and Peter was taking a nap. More than anything, Carmen was trying to pass time until Al arrived that evening. She was writing in her journal about the latest voice, a man's voice, that had called to Stephen from downstairs. When a man called,
Carm, you in here?
She dropped her pen and stood, thinking, Al's home early, as she spun around and smiled and said,
Al,
I'm in here.
Silence.
Al?
She went into the living room and stopped, staring at the empty doorway that opened onto the hall and the front entrance. Her smile quivered, then fell away. She frowned as she stepped through the doorway.
Al?
She asked again, but now her voice was quiet and just a bit unsteady. She was alone. Al had not come into the house. She looked out the window to find that he had not even arrived yet. Carmen released a long, breathy sigh, forced a smile, and muttered, "Well," thinking, "I must miss him, that's all. It's just that I miss him, and was thinking about him, and, yeah, that's all." She turned and went back into the sunroom to continue writing, but not before turning up the music on the stereo. 5. Summer into Fall, Part 1. It was a hot summer, with day after day of endless blue skies and nights covered with brightly shining stars. The air was redolent with honeysuckle, and during the day, the neighborhood rang with the laughter of children. Tanya had a baby girl, and named her Kara, and sometimes the sound of her crying was picked up by a summer breeze and carried to Carmen's. The sound made Carmen smile, somehow, and made the neighborhood complete, more comfortable. "So why does something not feel right?" Carmen asked herself again and again. The question was asked by an inner voice so quiet it was almost inaudible, because Carmen was trying her best to silence it. Stephen hated his treatments more every day, and was becoming more resistant. He was rude to the doctors and nurses in the hospital, and sometimes even snapped at Carmen. She tried to take it in stride, tried to tell herself that it was to be expected, considering the strain the treatments put on the boy. But it worried her nevertheless. On top of that, he'd lost more weight and was looking more frail than ever before. Sometimes when she hugged him, she feared he would break. Dr. Simon told her it was a good sign, though. "If he's being cantankerous," the doctor said, "that means he's holding up. If he's fighting us, then he's fighting the cancer. It's encouraging." So maybe it wasn't such a bad thing after all. According to the doctor, Stephen was doing very well and was likely to do even better. That was good. So what didn't feel right? Al was still working in New York, but came home every weekend like clockwork. The hard work weeks and long drives, not to mention his ongoing concern for Stephen, were wearing hard on him. He drank more when he was home on the weekends and was growing short-tempered. But in spite of his grumbling, he was willing to help around the house. He painted the stained walls downstairs. They went to church every Sunday. Carmen became involved in church activities just as she had back home in New York, and had made some friends there, women with whom she was able to spend time during the week. Plus, she saw Tanya a lot, and they took turns taking care of one another's kids, so each of them could get away from the house once in a while. So what was it? The other children, Stephanie and Peter, were fine. Michael was still in Alabama, but called regularly. Everything was just fine. Except for something. The feeling had started the day she'd mopped the kitchen floor. Kitchens seemed to be the first casualty in a house full of children, and it hadn't taken long for the brick-red mosaic linoleum floor in the Snedeker's kitchen to lose its shine, despite regular, if hurried, moppings. So one day, a few weeks ago, Carmen had gotten the mop and bucket, taken off her shoes, and rolled her pant legs halfway up to her knees, and begun a real scrubbing. The kids were all outside that afternoon, and the house was quiet. The mop sloshed back and forth over the linoleum, its soggy strands of cotton writhing like tentacles over Pepsi stains and water spots. Carmen had mopped enough kitchen floors to be able to do it with a certain detachment, so she dipped the mop into the bucket a few times before she finally noticed the smell. It wasn't very strong, but the cloying, coppery smell was certainly unpleasant. Then she noticed the water in the bucket. It was a deep, dark red. The mop strands were a glistening crimson, and Carmen's bare feet were smeared with red. In fact, the entire floor was smeared with red. She stared down at her feet, with her lip curled up in a sickened grimace. The smell hung in the air like smoke. Suddenly, Carmen thought of what Stephen had said their first day in the house. "Mom, we have to leave this house. There's something evil here." And her heart began to thunder in her chest as she stared at the dark red fluid on the floor all around her, smelling that faint but awful smell.
"No, it can't be,"
she whispered to herself.
"That can't be it. It's just the linoleum, that's all. That's all."
Deciding she couldn't let the kids see the mess, she quickly cleaned it up, using old kitchen towels and nearly half a roll of paper towels for the finishing touches. Then she'd given the room a couple of shots of air freshener.
"Just have Al rip that linoleum up is all," she muttered. "That's what I'll do."
But it had bothered her that day, and in the days that followed. Carmen hadn't told Al about it. She wasn't sure how. And what if he laughed it off? She just didn't look forward to mopping the floor again. The kitchen floor was part of Carmen's off-center feeling. Another part was the fact that Stephen had stopped talking about the voices he'd been hearing in the house. He no longer made references to the houses being evil. In the space of just a few weeks, he'd simply stopped, as if it had never come up in the first place. Carmen tried to tell herself that it was a good thing, that it was a sign Stephen was getting better. But whenever she told herself that, her inner voice whispered, "Is it?" Sometimes she walked into a room to find Stephen and Stephanie talking to one another with hushed, secretive voices. When they saw her, they would fall silent and pull away from one another, as if they had been caught doing something wrong. She thought nothing of it at first, but when it continued to happen, half a dozen times or so, she began to wonder if perhaps they were keeping something from her.
"So what are you guys talking about?"
she asked one day when she found them whispering on the sofa in the living room. She seated herself in Al's recliner and watched for their reaction. Stephen shrugged and muttered,
"Nothing."
He turned to the cartoons on television.
"We were wondering when Dad's coming home to stay,"
Stephanie said.
"It won't be long now,"
Carmen said.
"It'll be a month, maybe a little less, till this transfer comes through."
Stephanie nodded, then she too turned her attention to the television. "It's just your imagination," Carmen told herself. "They aren't keeping any secrets, and Stephen is getting better and everything is just fine." But, as it had so often recently, that tiny voice in the basement of her mind whispered, "So why does something not feel right?" Stephen had stopped talking to his mom about the voices he heard because it didn't do any good. She didn't believe him. He didn't talk to Al about them either. Al had become so cranky lately that if Stephen so much as hinted at the topic of disembodied voices, he snapped at him to knock it off and act his age. The only person Stephen could talk to about voices was Stephanie. Although she still insisted she'd seen a woman appear in her bedroom, Stephanie did not hear voices.
"But,"
she told Stephen one day as they whispered together on the sofa in the living room,
"sometimes I...
Her face was tense with thought, with frustration at not being able to find the right words. It was much too tense for a six-year-old.
"I feel like I'm not alone, when I really am. Nobody's with me. I don't see nobody, but I feel like there is somebody there."
But she didn't hear the voices Stephen heard. The cold, sneaky voices. The angry, mocking voices. Only Stephen heard those. But Stephanie was always willing to listen to him talk about them, and had promised not to mention them to Mom. Her responses were neither judgmental nor disbelieving, but were filled with little girl concern. Stephen found their talks comforting. They made him feel less alone. Even so, the voice was becoming more insistent, more demanding. It seemed to know when it was frightening him, and it seemed to enjoy his fear.
"Stephen."
Stephen froze outside the bathroom late one night. Everyone had gone to bed long ago, but Stephen had awakened with a full bladder. The voice spoke to him on his way out of the bathroom.
"Stephen, come down here,"
it whispered. Stephen headed down the hall, his body chilled with fear, legs stiff with tension. But he moved slowly because, in spite of his fear, he was drawn to the voice, compelled to stop and listen to what it had to say.
"We have things to talk about, Stephen," the voice went on. There are things to be done. No time to waste, Stephen. Let's get started.
What things? He thought, moving a little faster now.
Get started on what?
Time to stop putting it off,
the voice said, then chuckled. It was a sound like ice cubes clacking together. Stephen rounded the corner and went into the dark living room.
I have things to tell you, Stephen. We have things to do.
The voice was still whispering, and yet Stephen could still hear it clearly. He turned on the lamp at one end of the sofa, then the other. Under his pillow he had a Walkman with an AM/FM radio and a pair of tiny earplug-like headphones. He'd